The Guardian.
Hello all, James Richardson here, and before we get started with today's edition of Football Weekly, I'm going to point you in the direction of our sponsor Squarespace. For more about building beautiful websites, go to squarespace.com. And now, on with the show. It's deadline day, Football Weekly, and spewing out of our facts machine, FA Cup, big wins for big clubs, good news for the Shrews, and the passion of the Terry. Shock news of Chelsea captain's departure brings outpouring of tributes. Turns out his final album explained everything. On the way, we've got a whole set of midweek Premier League games. Leicester, were they the weekend's biggest winners? They host Liverpool at the top, while at the bottom, Prime Minister on the horns of a real dilemma as Aston Villa face West Ham. Good news for the PM elsewhere, though, as we'll round up a fresh bunch of migrants with the latest deadline day moves. We'll be hearing about the latest news from Europe, Gary Neville, Milan derby, all that sort of thing, and more in this Football Weekly. Football Weekly team in radiant yellow transfer deadline day shirts, just like a major news broadcaster has opted to do on this transfer deadline day. And there's Greg Bukowski.
Hi, James.
Yeah. And James Horncastle.
Hello, James.
All right. And Simon Burnton.
Hello.
Hey, your shirt fitting snugly over that bear costume, Simon.
Yes.
Delightful. Anyway, so much to talk about while we wait for kind of breaking transfer deadline day news to happen. Greg, I know you were doing the rumour mill this morning.
I was.
What was the top story in there?
Saito Berahino.
It was.
Yeah.
Where's he gone?
A tug of war between Stoke, Newcastle and Spurs. Although Newcastle looked like they've just signed Doumbia on loan from Roma.
Yeah.
And him being a striker, I don't know whether they'd have room for Berahino as well. Maybe they'll sod off and, you know, let Stoke and Spurs fight over him instead.
Beautifully put. We'll talk more about all of this as that story develops, because I want to begin with the FA Cup weekend. Magical time when the Premier League stops and a little bit of romance creeps into this increasingly commercialised game. Let's see. Upsets all over the place, weren't there?
It was enormously romantic. We talk about the romance of the FA Cup.
Yeah.
It was more of a dirty fling this weekend.
Was it?
Not a lot of romance.
There's a lot to be said for that. What guilty pleasures did you derive from the cup action?
Well, I had quite an entertaining, like Chelsea on Sunday.
Yeah.
That was quite entertaining for a while. It looked like they were going to tackle themselves into oblivion. Like they
Chelsea.
Were just, yeah. There was a while when they were missing lots of chances. There was that glorious diving lunge from Diego Costa that denied Oscar an open goal.
Really?
And for a while, it looked like they might contrive a way of, you know, only scoring two or three.
Right. In the end, they got, what, 5-1?
Yeah.
5-1.
MK Don's defence was just waving Chelsea through as well.
Quite, yeah.
You know, just, here you go, lads, on you go.
14 Premier League sides came into the fourth round. Only two went out. In both cases, it wasn't an upset. It was other Premier League teams. Peterborough's manager, Graham Wesley, suggesting that one of the reasons that you don't get as many upsets anymore is the fact that pitches are better, that back in the day you'd have your, you know, your pitch is ideally suited for a lower league clogger, but these days, not excited about it.
There's something in it, but I would say the fact that a lot of Premier League teams feel weakened teams has maybe kept that, you know, there's an even keel just about, maybe.
Right. Peterborough, of course, got a 2-2 draw at West Brom. They'll be replaying that in about, 9 days' time. The winner will be going through to a fifth-round clash with Reading, but the romantic result this weekend assuredly Shrewsbury Town's 3-2 win over Sheffield Wednesday. Shrewsbury all the way down in 20th place in League One, very much facing the drop potentially to League Two, but coming from behind twice to beat the Owls.
It got grim for them, didn't it, when Grimmer scores?
Ha!
97th minute.
It's a fairy tale finish.
Oof.
Because it
the brothers Grimmer.
Right, there you go.
Except he's probably an only child.
Right.
With Wally scoring the 87th minute equaliser as well. Wally and Grimmer, it was a good afternoon for names that mean something.
Yes, certainly was.
And Kelechi Promise Iheanacho. A name that means something.
We'll come on to that later, Greg.
Okay.
I bet you... Did you do that in a 10 things you learnt from the FA Cup this weekend?
No, I just Googled his name fully before.
Okay.
Yeah,
well, we'll talk more about Iheanacho later on.
had to have a bit of run-up on that one. It's an interesting combination of vowels.
It's like
that
Ian Nacho.
Ian Nacho, effectively, although it's not spelled that way. But more on him and his promise later on. So Shrewsbury will be in the fifth round facing Man United for the very first time in their illustrious history. It's the first time in 25 years that they've reached that stage of the competition. Producer Ben's so excited by this that he's put together in no way patronising 10 facts about Shrewsbury. Here are five of them. Joe Hart started his professional career there. Did you know that?
Sure.
Used to be the Gay Meadow, didn't it?
That's right. The ground used to be that, but then they changed sponsors. It's now the Greenhouse. Oh. New Meadow, but Greenhouse New Meadow. Yeah. It's the Greenhouse of Fate, I suppose. I don't know. Anyway, did you know, I bet you didn't know this, Simon, I'll be quick, listeners, don't worry. Shrewsbury are home to the world's tallest town crier, Martin Wood.
How tall is he?
He's 7 foot 2 inches.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. But he's got a big bell.
Yeah, that town. Yeah, thanks. Charles Darwin is probably the most famous former pupil of Shrewsbury School, or Old Salopian, as we say. In a recently discovered letter written by Darwin to his son William, which was dated the 1st of March, 1853, heads up, Canadian listeners, he writes, "My dear old Willie, have you got a pretty good pond to skate on? I used to be very fond of playing hockey on the ice in skates."
Wow.
Boom. Evolution of the game right there. Okay? No?
Yeah, that's
startling.
Those two, the town crier and that.
And that Darwin thing.
Yeah, John, wow, Peel went, John Peel went to Shrewsbury School as well.
Did he?
Okay. Yeah, I don't think so.
All right. Shrewsbury, also home to the oldest building in the world to house a McDonald's restaurant. This one dates back to the 13th century. And, of course, the Shrewsbury Flower Show is the longest-running horticultural show in the world. Bang. Keep those facts in mind. They'll be very handy when Shrewsbury take on... Is it home or away, that?
It's at home. It's at
home.
Brilliant.
Shrewsbury are at home.
It's a greenhouse new thing and that.
Brilliant. Hoping for a greenhouse effect.
Well, I used greenhouse effect earlier.
Did you?
Keep up.
Do you reckon they've got a load of horses trotting out on the turf now to get it nice and ready?
Yeah.
But if they've got any sense. But anyway, that's one of the delights to come in the no-doubt romantic fifth round of the Cup, which will also feature plucky Crystal Palace taking on Spurs, plucky Chelsea taking on Man City, all that kind of thing, and Arsenal up against Hull in a thrilling repeat of the third round last year and, of course, the 2014 final.
Can Akpom play? He's on loan, isn't he, from Arsenal? Scored a hat-trick. He's doing well.
We'll
find out, I suppose.
We'll discuss that when the fifth round, etc., and so on.
Very good.
Right now, barely has the fourth round, you know, shuffled out the way, then whammy, there comes an entire round of Premier League fixtures, Simon.
Yeah, and it's the return fixtures of Boxing Day.
Yeah.
It's one of those weird quirks of the fixture calendar.
Well, of only the Premier League fixture calendar.
Yeah. That you have this very short turnaround.
Mm.
I mean, of course, back in the day, you used to play home and away fixtures, or sometimes on Christmas Day and Boxing Day, or over the Easter weekend, and that's a genuinely micro-short turnaround.
That is.
But even so, it's kind of interesting with such fresh memories of the first games, particularly when, you know, when people might have a little bit sore memories of those Boxing Day games. Like, for example, Arsenal, who were trounced by Southampton.
They were, weren't they? 4-0.
Yeah.
All right.
Get their chance of revenge.
Well, they're coming off that victory at the weekend over Burnley.
Mm.
And a game which featured all sorts of positive signs for Arsenal. Sanchez looking good again. Coquelin making his return. And a debut for their new midfielder, Mohamed Elneny, who has loads of touches, great pass completion rate, 96%. He looked the part.
No. Yeah, Sanchez got a goal and an assist.
Mm.
And Mertesacker, who had a bit of a stinker on Boxing Day, is suspended. So I guess that's a bonus as well.
How well do you remember that fateful afternoon at St Mary's?
The Boxing Day game?
Yes, yes.
Vaguely.
Okay. Arsene Wenger at the time was complaining that the first goal was offside, the second was a free kick, the third was a goal kick. I mean, basically, he felt that the result was a lying
flattered
result. Yeah, flattered, Saints.
I don't know so much about that. I watched that game. I had to do the minute-by-minute on it. Southampton played very, very well, I thought, and got the tactics spot on. And Wenger, you know, I don't think he's... maybe the scoreline flattered them slightly, but I think Southampton were worthy winners. Played on the counter-attack, exposed Mertesacker's lack of pace, used Shane Long very well. They're very good.
Right.
They're in great form as well, aren't they?
Saints, yeah, three wins in a row, and I think three clean sheets.
Yeah.
Whereas Arsenal in the league have had two draws and a defeat in their last three. Yeah. Mertesacker will be back having... Well, he is available, having served his suspension, done his time, his debt to society, etc., in the FA Cup. Do you think, anyway, Greg, based on what we've just been saying, that the weekend's positive result for Arsenal might not be mirrored in this fixture?
I think they'll fancy the chances much more because they're at home, but I do think Southampton have played in a similar fashion to how they did against Arsenal in that game. United, they soaked up quite a lot of pressure, played with a lot of energy. I think they'll go about it exactly the same way.
And, of course, that 4-0 win came before Saints had Charlie Austin.
Yeah.
Dramatic pause. Arsenal already 3 points off the pace in the Premier League, level with Man City, but a full victory behind the mighty Leicester, who will be entertaining Liverpool, a Liverpool team who beat them. Was it 1-0 at Anfield?
1-0, yeah.
Boxing Day. Leicester, I was positing earlier, are they the biggest winners of the weekend? I say that because, of course, the fact that they've gone out and that Arsenal and Man City are still in means that they could have a massively reduced calendar compared to their title rivals. They have 15 games remaining this season, Leicester. Arsenal potentially have 28. Man City potentially have 29.
Ooh.
Exactly, thanks.
Leicester's right. Next three are Liverpool, Man City and Arsenal.
Yeah.
So, I mean, really, this is the... having been perhaps taken lightly over the whole season, if the next three games go well for them, then they're not just in the title race. They're probably the favourites.
You just said it, haven't you?
Mm.
Oh. If you look at their fixtures after this run of three,
they're
extraordinarily encouraging.
Right.
So if they come out of this run of three games with, say, 6 points or even 5 points, then it's all good for them.
So it's, okay, Liverpool now on Tuesday, Man City
away
on the weekend. The Arsenal game, I think, comes before Arsenal play Barcelona in the Champions League, which on Valentine's Day...
The Valentine's Day massacre.
Right.
They're going to be so rested going into the game against Liverpool compared to Liverpool, given that Klopp's side have just had the extra time match in the Capital One Cup and the FA Cup, where he did alter the formation. But I think Leicester will have 10 or 11 days rest going into that one on the back of a very, very good win against Stoke in the last game at Leicester. So they should be confident. The only thing is, when they played Liverpool in the last game, they kind of played within themselves, I thought, on Boxing Day. They weren't the Leicester we'd known previous to that. I think Klopp, if he's been doing his homework, the way to play Leicester is to put their defence under intense pressure and stop them getting the ball out in the first place. Because once they do all the damage in the final third, because that's where the better players are. But I think you might see particularly Klopp, like the three forwards that Liverpool play, dropping quite deep and hounding Leicester's defence and defensive midfielders to stop them even getting the ball forwards.
Right. But Leicester playing within the... Was that the point when everyone was feeling, wow, it's all catching up with Leicester?
Yeah, everybody was backing Leicester to... they didn't understand why they weren't favourites going into the Liverpool game because it'd been so impressive. Then they didn't score, looked jaded, and then after that, they have struggled to score as many goals and until that Stoke game where they looked rejuvenated. Vardy had an injury in between that time.
Groin operation.
He looked like he was back and fighting fit. So I do think this is, Leicester should be confident that they can be their old energetic selves in this game.
Wow. It's going to be quite a match by the sound of it. For Liverpool, Coutinho and Skrtel still out and Benteke 9 games... without finding the net now. 9.
Took a good penalty the other day, though.
There you go.
That stat about Liverpool conceding the first shot on target their opponents have had in every league game.
Really? Tell us that stat.
Year.
That sounds amazing.
Their opponents have scored with their first shot on target every game in 2016, every league game.
Wow.
Which is...
How many games is that?
4.
Well.
Give that goalkeeper a new contract.
Yeah. Sunderland Man City, just before we finish off this enormous part one, Sunderland Man City. Sunderland used to be, rather than the Black Cats, they used to be more of a bête noire for for Man City, but no longer. City's last three results against them, or actually last four, have been 3-4-1s, and the other one was 3-2. Huh.
They won 4-1 on Boxing Day.
Yeah.
De Bruyne played well that game. He scored one, got two assists.
Right.
Obviously, he's out.
Obviously.
And City's away form is still bad.
Hmm.
Well, it's one away win in the last eight. Hmm. And that win was at Watford.
Oh.
I saw that. And really, they played well for about 4 minutes.
Oh.
Scored twice in that time.
Right.
So, yeah, their away form is bad. I mean, if it's bad, whether it's bad enough to actually get close to losing at Sunderland is another question.
Well.
But there's certainly reason.
It's a reinforced Sunderland side, though. I don't know if we can use all the old cliches about the Black Cats, because now they've got Lamine Kone, who I know really well. Has he come from Lorient?
He's come from Lorient. He's an Ivorian centre-back.
Oh, there you go. And how up are you on Wabi Kazri, the splendidly named Wabi Kazri?
He makes me think of Labi Sifri.
There you go. Fine songster.
Yeah, hopefully he's got something inside that's so strong.
Bingo.
I know that he can make it.
Mm. Name another Labi Sifri song. Well, it must be love. I couldn't help myself.
There's a lovely song called Bless the Telephone.
Really?
Yeah, if you look that up, it's a really, really beautiful Labi Sifri number.
All right.
Yeah.
Was there any particular reason why he wanted us to extend our benedictions to this popular method of communication?
Well, because when you're away from home, as you often are as a travelling songstrel,
right,
you can phone home and that makes you feel nice.
Right.
It's basically what it's about. It's quite sentimental, but a lovely little tune.
Could you sing us any of it? Because you're quite musical, Simon.
I mean, I would, but I've got a cold, and so my natural tone is all right.
Any baritone notes would be easier within your...
Maybe if you're away from home, you'd feel more like doing it.
Yeah. Anyway, the first thing I do after we finish this, after crying, is checking that song out. Let's have a little break, and then we'll be talking more. Oh, no. No, sorry, Greg, because you wanted to talk about a man called Promise, known to you and me as Kelechi Iheanacho.
Mm.
And how about him? Crazy stats. 8 goals in 18 games, which, I mean, only 5 of those, I think, were starts. So,
yeah, and his hat-trick at the weekend, he looks like he has rich promise, which is, of course, really impressive. Yeah, his middle name. And well, it isn't rich promise, it's just promise.
Oh,
yeah,
right.
That'd be a bit weird.
His first name was Richard.
Kelechi Richard Promise Iheanacho. Yeah. Mm. But he could have signed for Sporting or Porto when he was 17, where he probably would have had more opportunities, you would imagine.
Right.
And he chose to go to City with all their wealth and all their power, which shows that he has, you know, absolute staggering bags of self-belief.
Right.
And he's, you know, he believes he can force his way into the Manchester City team. Mm. And it'll be an interesting year or two for him, because, you know, to see if City can in fact bring through another player. I know he's a bought-in youth product, but it's been a long time since they last did that. And he looks to be a player who maybe has all the attributes to join in with the kind of football they enjoy playing.
Pellegrini sounded in awe of his penalty-taking technique on Saturday. It was a kind of interesting incident. They won the penalty on Saturday, and Raheem Sterling wanted to take it. Pellegrini sent word on that he wanted Iheanacho to take it.
Right.
He scored it. And afterwards, he says, Pellegrini, it's unbelievable the way he takes penalties. I see him do it every day. So there you go. He's quite a cool customer.
What did he do that was so amazing that Pellegrini, who's been in football for how many years, has never seen anything like it before?
It was a really cool penalty. It was one of those when the keeper goes one way and the penalty taker slides it kind of calmly and slowly down the other side.
Is he a seer? Can he see into the future?
I don't know.
That would be unbelievable.
But you would have thought that after, you know, a little bit of debate about whether...
Hey, why would he be able to see into
the... Well, no, that would be unbelievable if he's unbelievable. That would,
I see.
But
yeah.
Anything else is just a technique.
Just quite good. Sorry, Sam.
After the waiting to see if he was going to take it, a little bit of debate about whether he was going to take it,
right,
you would have thought there may be some element of nerves, but it was a nerveless penalty.
Nerveless.
Yeah.
Great. Okay, part two's on the way.
Shoo-be-doo-be-doo-wop, Squarespace. Wum-bum-ba-dum, Squarespace. Loo-be-doo-be-doo-be, Squarespace. Squarespace.
Hey friends, just got an update on Football Weekly's roadshow. The luxuriously appointed Football Weekly transit van is, as you know, heading down to Bristol very shortly, with both Simon and James Horncastle here on board. That'll be quite a special night down in the West Country. It's the city I was born in, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. Look for that statue. I say that ironically, because they've never so much as put together two coppers to build some form of... Anyway, let's...
Would you like a statue kind of like the Michael Jackson one outside Covent Garden?
I don't care. Some, you know...
Ronaldo one, standing
Ronaldo
proud.
One. Yeah, maybe the Ronaldo one.
There must be some kind of domed building that they could at least...
What do you mean?
Put huge headphones
anyway,
on.
We're also going, moving along, to Dublin in March. Great, great, great podcast city, Dublin. Yeah. And Liverpool. Hey, we're going back to Liverpool, Greg.
Mm.
I think that's the first place we ever did a Football Weekly roadshow.
It was. What a night that was.
That was a special night, yeah. Wasn't it? Are we going to be at the wonderful... Dublin details will be on the way soon. I can reveal that it's going to be the Epstein Theatre. Do you know the Epstein Theatre? Is that named after Brian Epstein or something?
It's near Central Station, yeah.
And is it named after Brian?
I'm guessing. I hope. I don't know.
Might
I don't want to confirm that.
Okay.
Mm.
That's on Thursday, May the 12th. You can get your tickets at theguardian.com/Guardian Live. And, you know, without being silly, these things always go really quickly. And then you got lots of people saying, I couldn't get any tickets. So, you know, book early and book often, I think. Right, that's very exciting. As is, midweek match going on at Vicarage Road, Simon.
Yeah.
Which features the Hornets, Watford, taking on Chelsea. A Chelsea side, fresh from that game you so much enjoyed this weekend, their 5-1 win at Milton Keynes. A hat-trick for Oscar, despite Diego Costa's best efforts. And Hazard scoring as well.
He scored a penalty, yeah.
Well, still, it's his first goal of the season.
Yeah.
And what else happened? Ooh, the other big news, of course, about Chelsea. They've signed Matt Miazga from New York Red Bulls. Do you know much about him?
I do not.
Okay. Anyway, it was just a brilliant day all round for Chelsea. Loftus-Cheek got a game, did well. Bertrand Traore scored his first goal for the club.
They did look a bit scary. I know MK Dons kind of waved them through
right.
at times, but, it's the first time this season against any opposition that Chelsea have really looked overwhelmingly
wow.
great.
Yeah. Still unbeaten under Hiddink, is that right?
I think so.
We think so. All right, so nothing but...
So it
was wasn't any cool. other bad news out there, was there, for Chelsea, was there?
Well, there was John Terry.
Ah! That's right.
That seems
that's
to be
right,
the
it?
Fish you're dangling.
Yes.
Yeah, John Terry says this is it for him.
Yeah.
Another 5 months and he's out.
That's tremendously sad news. I mean, I say that and people think I'm being sarcastic, but I have a huge regard for him as a player.
Mm.
Whatever else he may have done, he's been an incredible player. But this whole kind of... It's remarkable the effect this had. Everybody's stopping and you've got front pages with pictures of Terry and all sorts of kind of very emotional headlines about him and how he's being forced out by heartless Chelsea and yet another travesty for the soul of the game, etc. But I do kind of wonder whether the reports of his passing may be a little bit exaggerated. Certainly he came out with this bombshell and the club of... Whether they're backtracking or whether he's just making a power play.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And they left the door open as well by saying that depends what the next manager's opinion is.
Right.
So
they issued a statement, no deal currently on the table, but that situation could change in the coming months. The channels of dialogue are open.
Yeah.
I mean, they could just be kind of being a bit fudging.
It's a little
it.
Bit like when he used Man City to get a new deal a few years ago. I mean, he's taken on Abramovich and his people before, and he's managed to get his way. Maybe he's doing it again. Maybe he thinks he is Mr. Chelsea, of course.
Mm.
It's strange how these club legends... I mean, he's the last of the Mohicans, if you like, of this...
Did he have a Mohican ever? He should do. Look a bit taxi driver, but...
Yeah.
Yeah.
But of that original Chelsea core, and of course being the one who came through the ranks. And yeah, I think it is important for Chelsea to retain these kind of players because... Yeah, they get accused, not by me, of being a plastic club with no history. And, yeah, John Terry is someone who is Chelsea through and through. And and you need players like that around, either in ambassadorial roles, coaching roles, director's roles.
Right. He doesn't have to actually play in the game to be a big part of the triumph, as he demonstrated with the Champions League. I have to go and bring that up, don't we? But here's our go-to guy for stats, Barney Rone. Yeah, come for the whimsy, stay for the stats. This is motto. He points out that Chelsea have won 25 major honours. Terry has been present. That's a little bit ambiguous, but I guess he means playing. Terry has been present for 16 of these, 64% of the club's total accumulated silverware.
Mm.
That's remarkable.
The huge caveat there is is Abramovich coming in. Although
you're saying his arrival was more significant than Terry's.
Well, yeah.
Okay.
Although I'm not doing down John Terry because he's been a fantastic player. One of the most interesting things about Terry is that I think he's seen seven managers come and go at Chelsea in that time, and they've still remained successful. So
some of them twice.
Well, yeah, there you go. And he's been quite the glue behind the scenes, I imagine, or within the squad to keep them together at times when there's been turmoil around him. And another thing in that he's seen as this meaty leader.
Yeah,
and I often think that has been. That is the image you see John Terry in. But he's such a good passer with the ball, and that's often overlooked. He can pass with both feet, distribute from the back. He's very, very good. And, yeah, he's just seen as this figure who's just, like, you know, rolling up his sleeves and winning games with pure muscle alone.
No, he scores goals as well, and a fine back heel. Mm. I mean, it was a bit offside, but still a fine back heel recently.
Do you think if Chelsea were to say, look, John, we're not going to give you a playing contract, but if you want to have a role on the coaching staff or be a director, he would take that? Because a lot of players of his generation, even though, let's say, it was a SNES kind of Sega Master System kind of era, that they said, look, we didn't grow up in the PlayStation sort of thing. Our playing video games was actually going out and playing football. They find it really hard to give it up. So, like, I mean, this is what all that sort of great look at some of the greats of this of that generation, like Raul, like Del Piero, like Pirlo, and that sort of thing. When Real Madrid or for example Juventus basically said, look, we're moving on.
Yeah.
Do you want to stop playing? You can come upstairs. Although they were kind of afraid to do that because of the power these people have, or seem to represent. They kind of said, no, we actually want to go on and keep playing.
Keep playing, yeah. Keep playing. Australia, North America, that kind of thing. Do you know what I'd like to see? What? If he does leave Chelsea, I'd like him to go to Milan. And they can get Baresi's shirt out of retirement. Give him that. That would be... I'm not kidding. I think that would be fantastic.
Yeah. Well, Vidic was such a success on the other sponder.
Chelsea haven't exactly got a good defence in waiting either, have they? So there's so many unknowns.
Well, unless they kind of send him to Everton for Stones or something. I don't know. Anyway, sorry, Simon. There's this amazing game going on what night is it? Wednesday?
Wednesday night.
Wednesday night.
Yeah.
When you being Watford, host Chelsea, and... you've ended your run of four defeats in a row with not only a 2-1 win over Newcastle in the Premier League, but also a 1-0 win over Forest in the Cup this weekend.
Yep. Which was, I didn't watch the whole game, but it sounds like an uninspired, fairly humdrum victory of a decent Premier League side over a decent Championship side. Watford scored in the 89th minute. A good chance fell to a good striker and you can't make that kind of mistake against Premier League teams.
Indeed not. Anecdotal evidence suggests then that Watford played reasonably well this weekend. And you've now gone and strengthened your team with Mario Suarez out of Fiorentina.
Yeah, and talk of Abdoulaye Doucouré coming today from Rennes, which is more ballast for midfield. There was a glimpse in the Newcastle game of a change in formation. We went to having played... two defensive midfielders for the entire season. There were three kind of central defensive midfielders on against Newcastle. And the sudden arrival of two extra central midfielders would suggest that that's the way Kike Sanchez-Flores intends to continue. So I guess an interesting tactical tweak, having not exactly been unsuccessful.
I'm told you got Leeds in the next round.
Yeah.
Possible quarter final, a cup run... it's quite exciting.
Memories of that Championship playoff that Leeds fluffed and Watford went up with their last chance, really, of getting in the Premier League for Leeds.
Yeah. At Stamford Bridge on Boxing Day, it was a 2-2 draw.
Yes.
Slightly streaky. Watford scored a heavily deflected goal. and a penalty. Was the other goal a penalty? Yeah. A heavily deflected goal and a penalty.
Mm. Oscar missed the penalty as well, didn't he?
Yes. A slip and went over the bar. So, I don't know. I feel that Chelsea... and people talked about them turning a corner yesterday.
They're back.
It looked more like more emphatic than a mere corner turn.
What would be more emphatic than a corner turn?
Well, perhaps a pirouette of some description.
All right, nice.
Chicane.
Yeah, slalom.
Yeah, perhaps a chicane.
Mm. Right. A handbrake turn. Could it be a handbrake turn?
It could have been a handbrake turn.
All right. Man United, have they pulled off some form of rapid change of direction style manoeuvre? Because look at this. They beat Derby at Derby, and Wayne Rooney scored his sixth goal in six games this year. Mm. And now they're going to be hosting Stoke. Ooh, Stoke beat them 2-0 at the Britannia. Former Man United man Mark Hughes at the helm.
Mm.
Are they going to inflict more misery? Are they going to reveal this to be a false dawn for the United supporters?
Is he at home? Hang on.
They're at home, so no goals in the first half.
Yeah, it's impossible to predict what United are going to do. I watched that. I watched most of that Derby game, and they were utterly dominant early on. Then they suffered a crisis of confidence at some point. Derby got on top, and it's almost like United suffered some kind of amnesia about how to play, and then suddenly they just clicked into action again and started.
Was there any tactical change which led to this?
I couldn't see it. I thought they were much better and much more controlled when Carrick came on after 75 minutes.
All
but
right.
By that time, they were already 2-1 up. I think at Old Trafford, they just... I don't know whether it's the weight of expectation on them from the fans, and there's such a difficult place for them seemingly to play with any verve. But it may be that Stoke are a little bit more open when they play against them. Perhaps that will give
you... Do you fancy the Potters?
Fancy it could be a draw, actually.
Yeah?
Mm.
Man United have Chelsea coming up at the weekend after this, so a weekend that could see them boosted under Van Gaal or see him take another big blow in the Premier League. Well, clearly.
It's been a slightly dispiriting week for Stoke. They're knocked out of both cup competitions.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
It does feel like there's been a slight tailing away since the end of the last calendar year when they beat Manchester United and were kind of floating on a wave of those
people were in here predicting them to be top four.
Yeah. And their record at Old Trafford is terrible. They think they've drawn one and lost 13 of their last 14 games.
Mm.
Last did the double over Manchester United in 1952-53.
Wow, you with your facts.
Yeah.
That's a long time ago, Simon.
It is a long time ago.
Even in football. Loads of other games going on this midweek. James, what do you want to talk about? Because you were just about to yawn there. So what is it that you want to talk about?
I wasn't yawning about these fixtures,
yep.
By no means.
Well, you know what? There's lots of things. You mentioned Sadio Dumbia going to Newcastle. Archer Interp pointing out Newcastle has spent more in the current transfer window than every Bundesliga club put together.
Wowzers. Yeah, they tend to go out and spend in the January transfer window. But
Sadio Dumbia, is that money well spent?
Well, if it's the Cesca Moscow Sadio Dumbia, then yes. If it's the Roma one, then no. But to be honest, I think Roma were a little bit quick to write him off because they signed him. They were in a bit of a crisis when they did, and he was at the African Cup of Nations with Gervinho. And they obviously won that at the Ivory Coast. And he then came back at the end of January and basically fell asleep on a bed and got like a chronic back problem again. And but in the Champions League, particularly at the beginning of this season, banging goals in.
Mm.
Him and his partnership with Ahmed Musa, who might also be on his way to the Premier League, is really, really exciting. So,
sounds like a good signing then.
Well, initially when Roma signed him, I was like, wow, this is, it's about time he came to one of the major five leagues.
Mm.
And just because it didn't work out from there doesn't mean it won't work out for him at St. James's Park.
Fair enough. Newcastle reinforced then against an Everton side who've only had one win in their last 10 Premier League matches.
Yeah.
One win in the last 10. It was against, though, Newcastle.
Mm-hmm.
Strokes chin.
although they're playing at home, and they haven't won a league game at home since the 21st of November, which is a long, long time. And the win against Newcastle came in the last minute, and that had been quite a close game at St James's Park. So it's a very tough one to call. I think Martinez, he's under pressure. I mean, as a neutral, I think Everton are fantastic to watch. They play some lovely, slick football, and you know what's coming at 70 minutes when it all starts to crumble and goals start flying in at the other end. But I think for Everton fans, it's very frustrating. Having been used to conceding very few goals with Moyes, it's a complete turnaround. I think they've missed James McCarthy in midfield. He was injured around the back end of November. He's struggled with injury when he's been trying to come back, and hasn't really played in midfield. And he's kind of holds things together for them there. He has come back. He played a full 90 minutes against Carlisle. Suggests he may not play against Newcastle, but you don't know. But I think he will. If Everton are going to have an upturn in form, I think he would be pivotal to it.
Okay, interesting. They're down in 12th place. They're only 8 points. Well, they're 8 points off the drop, but they certainly don't seem to be heading in the right direction. And a tough game there against this Newcastle team with a little bit of momentum behind them. Norwich, who don't have momentum because they just got beaten 5-4 by Liverpool, will be hosting Spurs, who could be second by the end of the evening. Spurs, today, a big day for them. Simon, do you think? Could they have more than one striker by the end of today?
Well, they're one of those linked with Berahino. I mean, they can't ignore this glaring hole in their squad for like indefinitely.
It's almost Wenger-esque, their unwillingness to, you know.
Yeah.
Hmm. All they want to do is collect people called Moussa Dembele, although I understand that the deal for Fulham's latest Moussa Dembele has been knocked back over their refusal to loan him back. Adam Hurry of Football Clichés points out there is a third Moussa Dembele around if Spurs want to go for the set. A 15-year-old striker currently at... so that would work, actually. He's only 15. But he's at Red Bull Salzburg.
And for all their lack of strikers, it only really becomes an issue if Harry Kane ever sustains some kind of injury. And they're still... they've scored 13 goals in their last four matches.
Strikerlessness never stopped Spain, did it?
Well, indeed.
Mm.
So it's not like they're having trouble scoring or winning.
Right. Would Vertonghenlessness, would that be more of an issue for them, do you think?
Yeah, probably. Mm. I mean, we've not seen a lot of Wimmer since he arrived, but, you know, this is his chance. He's going to be in for the next, presumably, for the next couple of months during Vertonghen's absence. So...
Okay. Anyway.
And Norwich's form is absolutely... Norwich's form is quite bad. I mean, they are shipping goals at...
shipping or perhaps even hemorrhaging, I think, at this point.
Yeah,
it
could well be a full-blown hemorrhage.
Mm. Yeah. Wow, that could be a game to watch then. Norwich Spurs, everybody. Other games you might want to watch. West Ham Villa. All right, then. Let's move on, shall we? West Brom against Swansea. Now, Saida Berahino making a rare appearance this weekend because it was the FA Cup. Do you know, he scored 7 goals and assisted 4 more in his last 6 FA Cup appearances. This fellow's deadly. So I'd love to know what it was that, I mean, beyond his kind of very public declaration of never wanting to do something with Jeremy Pearce again, something's happened there with Tony Pulis, who's always coming out pretty much every game that Berahino plays in. He comes out afterwards and says he's a lovely lad.
This weekend Pulis said, hang on, I've got the quote somewhere here.
He has to realise he is a footballer. In my opinion, he's wasted 3 or 4 months and he can't afford to waste any more time. But I can't imagine that it's him sitting there with his arms crossed saying, no, Tony, he said, not going to.
He's not fully fit, he lacks sharpness, and he's not as good as he was last year.
Oh.
Which isn't exactly talking the lad up, is it?
No.
Before a big transfer.
Did they play him this weekend because the transfer window is coming to an end and they wanted to stick him in the shop window, or was it just an FA Cup thing?
I assume it was just an FA Cup thing.
Right. I would love him to go. I think it's such a waste for him to be sat there.
I mean, I agree. If someone's going to play him,
he
has shown enough in his short career so far. I mean, I mean, whatever his issue is there, he should be playing somewhere.
Mm.
And Swansea do have a new striker to show the world, perhaps, in Alberto Poloski.
Yes.
Arrived last year, could get his debut, could make his debut.
Yeah. What do you think, James?
Yeah, well, he knows Gwydolyn well.
Mm.
He got Palmer promoted when Gwydolyn was on the bench there.
Oh, wow, of course he was there with... Yeah,
yeah.
Good shout.
And, he's not a flashy striker by any means.
Although he had a pretty remarkable debut, didn't he?
He did. He scored in his first three games for Milan. In both legs, I think, in the Coppa Italia against Catania. And then in the league, he scored 18 seconds after coming on against Siena. And his sort of boyhood idol was always Pippo Inzaghi. And he had a poster of Pippo in his bedroom. And he did.
Nods
and but, I mean, he's from the same part of the world as Mario Balotelli, and they're contemporaries, and yeah, they were coming through at the same time, one at Inter, the other at Milan, and yeah, great things were hoped for. I think Podolski's gone and had a more modest career, but you'd have to play maybe say slightly more consistent career. And
what is he, 26?
Yeah, and he'll guarantee you, you know, sort of work rate. He'll get you sort of into double figures.
He's been doing all right for Kiev, I know.
Yeah.
And not the easiest place to score goals.
Yeah, and he can do a bit of everything. I think, you know, he's not...
help with the programmes, that kind of thing?
Yeah, he's not... If you think of the style that Swansea have, the philosophy they had over the last decade, if you like, I wouldn't say he's like a particularly stylish striker. But he might be symptomatic of Swansea going in a different direction, maybe a slightly more direct.
It kind of feels like that's what they need. They would just seem like they were too nice, too easy to push over. So perhaps that's the kind of striker they need to get out of that.
Mm.
Mm.
They have won their last two, Swansea.
Yeah.
So, and there's been signs of revival. I saw their game against Watford and they played pretty well.
Right.
So, you know, they're coming off a very poor run, but... I don't think the wheels are falling off the Swansea project quite yet.
No. Well, one last game to talk to you about, and it's Crystal Palace against Bournemouth.
Yeah, talking of strikers making their debut.
Yeah, Adebayor. Now, this is Ms. Karen, who says, question for Barry, who's not here, of course, but mentioned the fact that the Barry said at the start of the season that he was keeping a place free in his fantasy football team, which is a disastrous policy. But you know. But anyway, for when Adebayor signed with the Premier League club because he guarantees you goals, should Barry, if he's listening, stick Adebayor now into that space if he hasn't filled it already? What do you think? Is he going to be... I guess what I'm asking is he going to be a success?
He's an enormous question mark, isn't he? And because he's not played for so long, where is his fitness?
He had that picture where he took his shirt off.
Yeah, he certainly, I mean, he doesn't look like he's been entirely idle. But
he wasn't holding a newspaper or anything in any way date stamped, so there's no way guaranteeing that that's a current picture.
Yeah, I suppose.
There's a difference between running around and looking like you're fit and actually being match fit as well, complete difference. And I'm sure he'll be blowing bubbles by the end of his first full Premier League game in as long as it's been.
Right.
The other thing is, he's a player who's always scored goals in, like, gluts. He'll score four or five on the bounce and he won't score for a long, long time.
Right. Well, that would be an improvement for Palace.
That might be nice for them, yeah.
Six games, they've scored just one goal, and that was an own goal contributed by, it was Vertonghen. Wow. So, anyway, they're going to be at home to Bournemouth. This big game for Bournemouth. They're only two places above the drop. Both teams victorious this weekend in the FA Cup fourth round. Crystal Palace beat Stoke. Bournemouth had that not a local derby. We've been informed not a local derby with Portsmouth 2-1 that finish. That was an exciting game. Pompey took the lead. One or two Portsmouth fans getting in touch. The last thing they need, effectively, after all the hard work they've done to save that club, is people suggesting that in any way they're not in a good place. Lost Transportation says, bit disappointed in comments from AC Jimbo about Pompey. We've hit bottom, we're now on the up again. There's a long way to climb. The club is debt-free, though, and living within its means. Built a better training facility and playing good football under Paul Cook. Highness, that's the way it's spelt, says, yeah, ground-owned, biggest fan-owned club in the country. Fifth right now with a game in hand and a far superior goal difference. Right, there you go.
Yeah.
And this is just 3 years after the Pompey Supporters Trust were out, you know, with buckets and stuff, performing what was at the time an extremely unlikely takeover. It didn't look like that fan action was going to be able to. It was going to be able to contribute more than a drop in the ocean of their debts. But yeah, well, fantastic. I'm sure we'd all be delighted to see them. Even Southampton fans would be delighted to see them on firmer ground again, which they are. I'm not suggesting they should get to that. Everybody. Right, okay. Now, more listeners getting in touch, which we always like to see.
Yeah.
Radar, we're talking about a Wham tribute act last show. Radar says, surely the Wham tribute act should be called Sham. That makes sense.
Baby sham, if it was like a kid's wham.
We'll just leave it at okay. sham. Okay. Dennis Collin wants to contact Sid Lowe for a summary of Zidane's amazing debut. His first four results. Have you seen this, Simon?
Yeah, they've been scoring all sorts of goals.
5-0, 5-1, then that 1-1, and then 6-0 this weekend. The funny thing is, this Monday, pointing out that it's actually almost identical to the start that Rafa Benitez had. Basically, they're just a very, very good set of players in a league which doesn't have that many good players. Benitez had 15 goals, 4 and 0 against in 3 wins and a draw. Zidane's had 17 goals scored and 2 conceded. It's the same goal difference and same 3 wins and a draw. Rather less impressive is Gary Neville's record at the helm of Valencia. They lost 1-0 at home to Sporting Gijón this weekend. Which led to some fairly heated scenes post-game as Gary Neville called out a local journalist and told him he wasn't doing his job. "I've been a journalist, so I know what I'm talking about," said Gary Neville, who also suggested that they should have won 4-0 or 5-0 and that was their best performance so far. But his record actually stands 8 games in the league now, although they've done okay in the Copa del Rey. 8 games in the league now, 3 defeats, 5 draws. That's not good. Yeah. Simon, producer Ben saw you at the movies.
Yeah.
You went to see Revenant.
Yeah.
And this is going to disappoint you, listeners. He didn't go in his bear costume. Can you imagine the terror you would have caused?
Yeah. Indeed.
You didn't like it either, did you?
No, I thought it was bad is the wrong word.
Right.
It had qualities as a film, but I thought it was just horrible.
Really?
I thought it was a horrible film.
A horrible in what way?
It was just a string of unpleasant events that happened as unpleasantly as anyone could imagine them happening.
Right.
So, you know, a bloke doesn't just get attacked by a bear. He gets attacked by a bear who snuffles off on him and comes back and attacks him again.
Yeah, that and, bear.
Like, he doesn't... He gets washed into a river and an icy, cold, freezing river.
Mm.
And he doesn't just go down a waterfall. He goes down... several waterfalls.
Yeah. Are we going to put a spoiler alert on this pod, by the way?
Well, everyone knows about...
The trailer effectively tells you everything but the last thing that happens.
Okay.
We won't spoil
it. I'm not going to watch it.
But,
I thought it was a beautiful film. I would recommend
just
it.
Just a mean-spirited... Like, it had...
Oh, the world is a cruel mistress.
It's very much nature in all its stark and raw beauty, you know?
Well, the scenery is beautiful and it's nicely shot.
Yeah,
and if
nicely shot.
If that is going to be enough to get you through 3 hours of repugnant misery, then great, go for it. But take earplugs, don't listen
to it. You have Watford for that, don't you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, now, moving on then.
Yeah.
Italy. Been a lot happening there.
Just a bit.
First of all, Roberto Mancini... at Inter has managed to lose to both of the club's most hated rivals in the space of 5 days, Juventus in the cup, and now, after a 3-0 hammering by Milan in the derby, Milan. Yeah. And he got sent off.
He lost his cool. Not only the game, he gave the middle finger to Milan fans as he was as he was sent off. And then he lost it with one of the presenters of post-game show on Mediaset Premium.
He's always been a prickly character, hasn't he?
Yeah, he called her line of questioning crap.
Really?
Which was a little bit... it was a silly question.
What was the question?
The question was... the week before, Inter star striker, Mauro Icardi, who was the top scorer in the league last season with Luca Toni, he missed a chance and Mancini had said, "I'm 50 and I would have scored that."
Mm.
And she suggested that it had completely destabilised Icardi and that's why he missed the penalty, which would have made it 1-1 in the Madonnina. And yes, he didn't take kindly to it.
Mm.
So, but Inter in full-on crisis, as you mentioned.
He's, reports today that fella, Icardi, who was club captain, could now be sold because he's fallen out with Mancini. They were looking daggers at each other. He was certainly looking daggers at Mancini on the bench yesterday.
Yeah,
he was benched.
It's not the first time Mancini's fallen out with one of his players. Icardi was given the captain's armband at the beginning of this season. And he's had his ups and downs. Inter haven't been a team that have created a lot of chances. They don't score a lot of goals. And when it's been put to Icardi, that's because of him. He said, look, I've had only four or five chances this season. I've put four or five goals away. So it's got nothing to do with me. It's got to do with the team.
Mm.
And he's been left out because of that attitude. Left out for big games as well. Mm. On the bench against Roma when they won. And then obviously on the bench to begin with last night. So, you know, Inter have really suffered a downturn in results when you consider they were top of the table on January the 10th and looked like they're going to be winter champions.
Right, it'll be about like 4 o'clock, 3 o'clock maybe when this goes out to listeners. If you were, you know, any Premier League clubs out there who would think we've got 6 hours or so maybe until the transfer window closes, should we splurge and get some goals in with Icardi? Would you say yay or nay, James?
I think this is a definite prospect for the summer.
Right. He's not a team player, though, is he?
No, I mean, he's very much a goal scorer and that's it.
Mm. But, I mean, he'll walk off with his teammate's wife and that kind of thing. And their kids.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And rub right. it in on social media.
Yeah, repeatedly. Yeah. I don't know.
And, yeah, because basically they've signed a new striker, Eder, who started yesterday. And should have really put Inter in front in the first 10 minutes. Had a couple of chances. And Eder used to be a teammate of Icardi's at Samp. And remember when Icardi went to Inter, basically the person he'd jilted, no, not jilted, cuckolded.
Cuckolded, yeah.
Maxi Lopez was playing alongside Eder at Samp. And Eder said, he's a real man, is Maxi, not like that Icardi. And now they obviously have to share the space up front together at Inter.
That's interesting, isn't it? Yeah. Right.
Tension.
In other news, in Italy, Juve won again. That's 12 games in a row now.
Yeah, and Paul Pogba was in sensational form.
Mm.
He really looks the part in that number 10 shirt now. A lot of people saying, oh, he doesn't have the skills to be a number 10. He's not right. what you accustomed a number 10 would be. And the way he took a ball down and kind of Cruyff turned it with his first touch was incredible. But yeah, I suppose we should mention the startling choreography at the beginning of the
Oh, yeah, we should. That
the
was
Milan
great.
Derby, yeah. Which was of in the Milan end, the Curva Sud, and they had this big banner going down three tiers, which is of one of the great derby moments, which is Mark Haitley's headed goal. And, of course, the Inter hadn't conceded a headed goal all season, and what did they do?
They conceded a headed goal?
Yeah.
That's what happened. Amazing.
Sensational.
Right. Anyway, it was a terrific start and a terrific game all in all. You mentioned Paul Pogba's bit of skill. Moment of the weekend, though, was probably Roma getting their first win under Luciano Spalletti with their brand new loanee signing, Stephen El-Shaarawy, who we were talking about on Thursday, comes on. Was it his first touch? I mean, it was certainly his first game for them. What a brilliant goal he scored.
Yeah, a volleyed back heel. Which he said he learnt from Ibrahimovic when he was playing with him in his first season at Milan. But yeah, generally nice to see him back because I think there was a lot of hype around him in his second season at Milan when they'd sold Ibrahimovic. Mm. And for the first half of that campaign, he scored 16 goals before Christmas.
Mm.
And then Milan doing what Milan do. They brought in Balotelli, started playing a different formation. He got shunted out wide. He then broke his foot again. And apparently, by all accounts, he's a very sensitive soul, doesn't take criticism or pressure particularly well.
Yeah.
And he's faded from view until, of course, on Saturday.
Right. It's interesting you should say there was hype about him because he looks like the fella out of Kid and Play.
Yes.
Yeah. Right. OK, well, that's it then for today's Football Weekly, I think. Simon, anything else we should know before we head into this midweek set of fixtures?
I think we've all learnt enough.
Really? That's enough for now. Greg?
I had my own failed deadline day kind of stuff going on this weekend.
What's that?
I was supposed to move on Friday to a new house.
Right.
And the person I was buying off on the day put the price up by 20 grand and said,
"You're kidding.
Pay this off the books or you're not moving in."
Oh, that's terrible. Can you do that?
Well, because we couldn't get hold of him to exchange, so he didn't exchange. And so we were left in our flat with loads of boxes with people wanting to move in.
Yeah,
so apologies to Tom and Anna, by the way.
You sold your place?
Yeah, we haven't exchanged on that.
Right.
And just before I came into the pod, exciting news, we lodged another bid with another place. I'm yet to know what the result is. So
wow.
I am having my own kind of transfer.
Wow, that's way more exciting than the other transfer day.
Yeah, so we'll see what's
Sky Sports News should be all over your
outing. There'll be a yellow ticker later on.
Greg does have his phone on the desk.
Yeah. I've had to switch it off, though. You know, there could be all kinds of
who knows
of exciting
where you'll be living
stuff
by
going on there. Or it could be crushed.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, fingers crossed, Greg. Fingers crossed. And what that person, if you're listening, person who tried to get Greg over a barrel,
maybe you should get Jock involved. You send Jock round.
Well, I did go round myself, but he wasn't in.
All right. Yeah. James, I can't imagine you want to add anything after that.
I moved on Friday, actually was luckier.
Look at you. Smug mover. Yeah.
All right, listeners. We'll be back on... we're not moving anywhere. We'll be here same time, same place. No, not same time, because it's obviously a completely random concept. But same, you know, you can find us here anyway on Thursday. Have a great midweek. We look forward to speaking to you then. Thanks to everybody. Bye for now.